Welcome to this live course, Sunday, 26th of April, 26. And as usual, just to put up my details, say I am here to help. I won't labour on that one. After, 8 months, whatever it is, everyone should know about this by now. So today, just a couple of very short updates. And the main topic is, should I change my technique? And then we'll kind of field any questions around that. So updates, feedback forms. Thank you to those who've done the feedback form. There are still some that haven't been done. It'd be great to just get those in just so I know how people are using the platform, what you want out of it going forwards. And on that, version 1.5, which is like the auto system that generates an 8-week plan, is going really, really well. And we're just in the middle of rewriting the assessment part of that at the moment, but all the framework is written. It's been proven and all the rest of it. So it's just actually getting the code written now for the kind of assessment part. And then the rest of it is the how do I do it. So primary subject today is, should I change my running technique? So the original idea would have been to split you into groups and to get a bit of a discussion going on about this. So as we have Julia and Mark with us, you two can have the discussion between the two of you. I want you to discuss, and if someone's got a pen and paper or something to write stuff down, is all the reasons to change your technique and all the reasons not to change your technique. And also to think about, you know, what camp are you in? Are you in the don't change your running form, just run naturally camp, or are you fix or change your running form? Now, I was going to give you 5 minutes to do this. So I can stick the two of you in a breakout room so you can discuss it between yourselves. So you're not having to me listening to you. Okay. And we can kind of go from there. So if I put the two of you in there, manual. I'm going to stick you in the same room. Okay. So you're going to go in that room. I'm going to give you 5 minutes and you should be, there you go. And welcome back.
Hello.
Hello.
That was a quick 5 minutes.
Oh, I thought I might be giving you too long there. Ah, that's interesting.
Okay. So I wrote the notes. I had a pen.
Okay.
Do you want me to read it out?
Yes, please. Yes.
So the reasons for change: avoid injury, improve ability, so pace and endurance. Longevity, you know, so hopefully we can run for longer into our older years, which in turn sort of would make it more enjoyable. I said potentially sort of make yourself less self-conscious when you're running, and that I get told a lot that I run very weirdly. I don't really care what people think, but there might be people who do care what people think of the way they run. So, so there were the reasons for changing. The reasons for not changing is it makes it less enjoyable. Have to keep thinking about these things when you just want to go for a run. It sort of overcomplicates it, which in turn could lead to more injury risks because you're. Can you explain that, Mark? You're sort of over. Yeah. Almost like
overcompensating. You're going out for a run and it just makes it all complicated and if you don't concentrate on something, then potentially you could cause an issue to appear that you hadn't really thought about before because you're concentrating on everything else rather than just going out and just having a run. You're too focused on trying to change your technique.
So I think that's completely what I maybe have done with some of what I've been doing, Chris. That I'm trying so hard to be light on my feet, I end up on my toes, and then I end up my foot hurting, or I'm trying so hard to kick my heels up that I overdo it and make my hip hurt. So, you know, actually causing problems that I didn't have to begin with because I'm overthinking it. Anything else we... I think that was, and then we talked about which camp we're in. I'm still, I'm a bit, I'll let Mark. I'm a bit on the fence. I want to change and I want to give it more time, but how long do I give it? I sort of feel like I'm making progress, sort of two steps forward, and then I seem to go a step back. And it is definitely taking the enjoyment out of it. Mark, what would you say, Mark?
If I was being positive, I'm saying on the fence, totally. But what I'm really struggling, I was saying in the chat room that I remember being at London Marathon, or attending the London Marathon last year, supporting, and I had this injury then, and I've still got it now, and I've seem to be going nowhere with it, and very much like Julia, I seem to be taking a couple of steps forward and then it just goes back to square one. And it's kind of like just taking the enjoyment out of running, because I want to run pain free, and that's just, it's just not happening as much as I try. So I'm very frustrated at the moment. So
okay,
I don't know whether I should just forget about changing my technique. I go out every run time and I just need to relax, not to stress about it, just go with it, but it's not always possible.
Okay, so that's interesting. So come back to you first then, Julia, on that. So if you're kind of on the fence about it, and you you're both kind of both the same kind of feeling, is this not enjoyable at the moment because it doesn't seem to be working in terms of resolving the pain issues that you both have. So I suppose the question then would be, what happens if you don't change it?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit less so I have seen improvement in definitely with knee pain. So no knee pain at all. So I have seen improvement in terms of that. If I don't change it, I think you'd tell me that, I risk not being able to, it's the longevity. And I probably will not be able to run a marathon, but I can say goodbye to that. I'm not that bothered. It'd be nice to be able to do one and nicely. I guess the risk for me is longevity. I'd like to get faster, but I'm not that bothered. I'd like to get faster and that'd be great, but that's my priority for me is longevity. And I guess you might argue, Chris, that if I don't improve my running technique, then I'm shortening my running career. In your view, is that right? I don't know.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting because I think from what both of you have said, I think you're ultimately in the same place, but for very different reasons. I think, Julia, you have progressed a lot in terms of where your pain, but I think the underlying challenges that were there beforehand have improved, but are still there. In terms of stability, in terms of vestibular, in terms of some of the cerebellar stuff, although it has improved, it's still there. So it hasn't been, it isn't yet at a skill level that allows you to run pain-free. Okay. And the challenge is how you've got to obviously want to get through that, keep going with that and finding your way through. And doing it in a way where you can feel progress. And I mean, the main thing is if you get rid of your pain right now, you would enjoy running, you'd enjoy the process more of improving. But because your running is associated with pain, then it makes the whole thing less enjoyable. Because although there's been a lot of progress, I've seen a lot of progress in how you're running, is that if you still have pain when you're running, as far as you're concerned, that's not enough progress. So I think that's where you come from. Mark's situation is slightly different because I think your experience of pain has changed a lot since you talk about this time, you know, last year, but it didn't stop you from running severely this time last year, did it, in the same way? And it's kind of been displayed in different ways. You've also had a lot of disruption, Mark, where you haven't been able to do a lot of the exercises and a lot of the stuff, in terms of consistency. So I think these sorts of things have to be taken into account as well. And I think it can be very frustrating. But as we go through, the rest of this evening, it'll come out a little bit more. I don't want to kind of say too much right now, but it'll come out a little bit more. But I think you have to look at we have to all have to look at the bigger picture. I don't think anybody runs, no matter what level they're at, I don't think anybody runs completely without any kind of pain or niggle or areas where they've overdone it, and I'm specifically not saying injury, okay? But I've never had a running injury in all the years I've been running, never had a running injury. Doesn't mean to say that I don't have pain when I'm running or after I'm running, but it's not running might aggravate it, but it wasn't running that caused it. So I have to take a slightly different approach. So we have to just have a look and see what else is underlying. I mean, Mark, we know one of the biggest issues you have is the amount of tension that you create, and some of that comes from your job and from your military background as well. But until that gets addressed, you're always going to be one step behind in terms of going forwards with anything. So I think you have to kind of take a step back and look at the bigger picture in terms of that. And they're not necessarily running technique based. And I think what we have to do is not get caught up in what running technique, in encompassing everything within running technique. And that will kind of come out as well. I think there's a lot of confusion about that. So if we kind of look at the kind of topic for this whole live call came from a question from Julia, which was that most of what I read says don't try to change your running style. Your body has adapted to your style and you run like that for a reason. You risk injury by changing. But you don't say that, and meaning I don't say that. So am I risking injury by trying to change? Am I better off staying as I am, albeit slower? Or do you think I would have more injury risk longer term if I don't change the way I run? Although I would like to run faster, my main objective really is longevity. I want to be running for years to come. And I think a lot of recreation runners, myself included, that's the kind of ultimate goal, really, is to carry on running for as long as we want to, really. But just looking at that question, just given from what you both said about your pain and what you've kind of put down and reasons to change and reasons not to change, and what you know about the nervous system now, for everything that you've gone through membership and just chat to me normally, not generally, your body has adapted to your style and you run like that for a reason. Anybody got a comment on that bit first of all? Okay, because when we say your body's adapted to your style, it's always going to adapt to your style. That's being a human being. You know, if you hurt your leg and you've got a limp, and you see people limping all the time, limping was probably really useful for them at the time they formed that limp, because it probably took some pressure off wherever that injury was. But they haven't done anything about it, so they carry on with the limp. They don't notice it after a while, but they're still walking with a limp. The body's adapted to that style. Does that mean to say they shouldn't change it? Who knows? Maybe not. So we have to be really careful when we say when we interpret stuff that's put out there to say that your body's adapting to this. That's what your body does. That's what it's designed to do. It'll always adapt to it. Doesn't necessarily.
Sorry to interrupt. Can I just take the example of my hip?
Yeah.
My hip's used to moving a certain way, and then I guess tried to kick my heels up a bit more, and that potentially made my hip a bit sore because it wasn't used to be moving quite in that to that degree. Maybe, I don't know. So my body had adapted to not having to move like that, and now it's had to move, and now it's hurting.
Yeah.
Goodbye. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I feel like my hip had adapted to moving in a certain way, and now it's having to move very slightly differently, and it doesn't like it.
It doesn't like it, yeah. So the work hasn't been done to help it to move in the way that it would need to move in order for that to happen, is what that tells me. Okay. So as we go through, I'll come clearer as we go through. Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
So anyway, I did ask Julia for some, you know, where she'd been reading some of the stuff about not changing your running form. And one of the sources was this Runner's World article. Okay. Which you won't be able to read in the small print there, but I did type it out. So it's called Find Your Own Form. And the article reads, a recent analysis of running form concluded that no particular style is better than another. The study focused on ground time versus air time. In short, are you a shuffler or a bouncer? Interestingly, researchers concluded that where you are on the continuum makes no significant difference to your running economy, i.e. the amount of oxygen you use at a given speed. This builds on the conclusion of a classic running study, a 1987 report from Williams and Kavanagh, which found that experienced runners self-optimize their stride. In other words, we all happen upon the running form that works best for us. So if you're not continually injured, it may be best to leave your running form as it is. As Emil Zatopek said, I will run with perfect style when they start judging races for their beauty, like figure skating. For now, I just want to run as fast as possible. Okay, any comments before we kind of delve into this a little bit more? Any comments on that as an article? Nope. Okay. Does anybody know who, or do either of you know who Emil Zatopek is? Or was?
No idea.
Okay. So let's we'll come back to this article, okay? Because what I want to do, the kind of the rest of this call is looking at the claims this article makes, because it comes, and that will help with the confusion about running technique, okay? And why I think there's a lot of misinterpretation about it. But first of all, Emil Zatopek. So this is Emil Zatopek. He three times Olympian in the 50s, late 40s, early 50s. And this is from the 1952 Olympics. Is he going to play the video?
Heavy rain had literally saturated the track by the time runners from seven nations are called to get onto their marks for the 5,000 meters final.
Can you hear it? Or?
Yeah.
They're off, and it's Markkula of Finland, number 208, going into an early lead, but not for long.
Thank you. Support it there for a second. That's Zatopek over here. Okay. So the first thing I want to say about this, relating it directly back to that article. So he's a three times Olympian. It was 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, and then marathon. Okay. And actually his debut marathon as well. So quick question. That article we just looked at, Runner's World article, said it doesn't matter whether you're a shuffler or a bouncer. And then it mentions Emil Zatopek in terms of how he looks in his running form. So looking at these guys here, do you think they're standard recreation runners that have this shuffling style?
No.
So what is the relevance of putting Emil Zatopek...
on, increasing his lead to 40 yards.
So question is, what is the relevance of putting this in an article about recreational runners and whether you're a shuffler or a bouncer, you don't, and you know, your form finds itself? Clearly, they're not, you know, and this kind of starts me off in a little bit of a kind of a rant, really. But when we look at these things, I think sometimes we just have to, be wary of our interpretation of what's being said. So we'll look at then the analysis that they used. So they talk about the analysis, and it was a systematic review by Van Huren et al. Okay, the relationship between running biomechanics and running economy. A systematic review, a meta-analysis of observational studies, published in Sports Med of May 2024. So quite a new systematic review. And what they did is they took 51 studies. So 51 studies that looked at certain elements of running form. Okay. They were mostly recreational runners, mixed level, but mostly recreational. And the focus was to find a relationship between running biomechanics and performance, running economy, which is what the Runner's World article pulled out, and injury risk. Okay, that was what it was set up to do. The conclusion of that systematic review was that running biomechanics can explain 4 to 12% of the between individual variation in running economy when considered in isolation. Okay, and this is the critical part. With this magnitude potentially increasing when combining different variables. So basically what they're saying is they looked at the individual elements or the individual variables, they call it in the study, of running form, and said there was no, it was only 4 to 12% of the difference between performance, okay? So, or variation running economy we're talking about here. Okay, so that's the individual bits, individual elements, individual variables in isolation. Okay, that's a really important part. So their core findings were there was no single biomechanical variable that predicts performance. And they looked at foot strike pattern, they looked at stride length, they looked at cadence, and they looked at joint angles. So what they're saying is, across those 51 studies that they looked at, foot strike pattern by itself, not taking into account the other three, just by itself, was a predictor of performance. Okay, stride length, forgetting the other three, just by itself, wasn't a predictor of performance. Cadence, just by itself, not including the other ones. There's not correlating these together, just purely in isolation, isn't a predictor of performance. Same with joint angles. So could it be that we have a 16-minute 5K runner and we have a 30-minute 5K runner? And could they have the same cadence? Absolutely. Absolutely, they could have the same cadence. So in isolation, is it of any use to us? Could they have the same stride length? They might do. Unlikely if you're a shuffler, I'll admit that one. But they definitely could have the same foot strike pattern. They could both be heel strikers. It doesn't say they're not measuring where the foot lands. They're just measuring how it lands, whether it's on the heel, whether it's midfoot, or whether it's forefoot, not whether it's under your body or ahead of your body. That wasn't measured. And joint angles. So any single variable in isolation couldn't predict performance, but they're not looking at it as a whole picture. They found that there's no consistent relationship across the studies in terms of these individual elements being brought out, and different runners perform well with different mechanics. Well, we know that. Just go down to parkrun. Just go look at London Marathon today. You see that. You see that every single time you go out running with other people, you see that people perform well with different mechanics. And there's no universal best technique variable. Okay, not universal best technique. There's no universal best technique variable. Okay, out of the four that they looked at. They also found that injury risk is not explained by simple mechanics. There's no single variable out of those same ones again, foot strike pattern, stride length, cadence, joint angles, that consistently predicts injury. Well, we've known this for decades. Injury is multifactorial. Who knew? Factors include training load, tissue capacity, and your own history. And they have added in here coordination as well, which is great to see, because that's obviously, from my perspective, I think coordination is one of the really biggest ones that contribute to both performance and injury risk. So they found that there are large differences in movement patterns between the runners. Large differences between in joint strategies, yet they have similar outcomes on performance and economy. Multiple movement solutions can work. Again, that's not really a surprise. I don't think that's the case. However, what the review does not say, it does not say that all running styles are equally good. Okay, it does not say you shouldn't change your form. And it doesn't say that the body always optimizes perfectly. It doesn't say any of these things. Yet that Runner's World article very clearly points to the fact that that research does say that, and it doesn't. So what we can safely say from that review, though, is there isn't one perfect way to run and no single technique variable in isolation by itself that guarantees better performance or lower injury risk. So when we look at running technique isn't a single variable. Okay, you don't run just with cadence. You have to have the other stuff that goes with it. You have to have a foot strike pattern. You have to have, you know, stride length. But they haven't looked at any combination of anything. It's purely looking at it individually, okay? The review was limited to only looking at these things in isolation, and that's really the key here, okay, of these particular elements. It doesn't take into account any combination of the variables or the actual movement output itself, okay? If you were to take a step back and see the runner running, okay, so a 16-minute 5K-er and a 30-minute 5K-er, okay, you could zoom in on an individual bit and see that they might be the same, therefore you conclude that there's no difference, but you zoom out and there's a massive difference, okay? So from the review, this is another interesting point, is running economy is always measured at the same speed. So the reviewers actually had to exclude certain studies. They had to limit the scope of the review, for example, by only including studies that assessed correlations with all participants running at the same speed as opposed to a percentage of the ventilatory threshold or VO2 max or VO2 peak, as they call it in the study. Okay, so basically what they're saying is that 16-minute 5K-er and that 30-minute 5K-er were running at the same speed when running economy was measured. Now, clearly, that wasn't at the 16-minute 5K-er's pace, race pace, because a 30-minute 5K-er wouldn't have been able to do that. So this is a really important element of it as well. Okay, so running economy is oxygen cost at a given speed. So in the studies, if we have a runner A, who's our, let's say has a 16-minute 5K-er, smooth and elastic, and runner B, who's our 30-minute 5K-er, flatter, shuffling gait. Okay, but both are tested at, let's just say, 8 kilometers an hour, which is 7:30 minutes a kilometer or 12 or 4 minute mile pace. And if their oxygen use is similar, they're considered to be equally economical at that speed. So for our 30-minute 5K-er, doing a 7:30 minute kilometer pace, okay, just slower than a 12-minute mile pace, is still sub-threshold. Okay, so they can still in the easy run. But for the 16-minute 5K-er, they're practically walking, or they probably are walking at that, not far off, very, very easy jog. But because their oxygen usage at that low, very low intensity effectively is the same, they're classed as being equally economical. Now, I don't know how helpful that is in determining anything about running technique, but to me, that doesn't seem particularly helpful, okay? Because they're not measuring at relative threshold zone, okay, which would actually be much closer to that 30-minute 5K is 30-minute pace and that 16-minute 5K is 16-minute, okay, and their oxygen use at that. And then they don't have a direct comparison, but they actually excluded any studies that did that. They only wanted ones that did them at the same speed. So again, we're kind of comparing. It's just a bit kind of weird. Because what happens is as the pace increases, so as that 30-minute 5K-er gets close to their 5K pace, and the 16-minute 5K, so the 30-minute 5K pace, which again is still even slower than slow for them, okay, that as they get to that point, if the 16-minute 5K-er goes past, now they're going towards more of a, let's just say, a 22-minute 5K, it's still really easy for a 16-minute 5K-er, a 30-minute 5K is already burnt out, they can't do it. So as the demand changes, we have different needs. We need shorter ground contact time, okay? More power, but more power in a shorter time on the ground, okay? Very different. We need a higher force production to be able to enable that. We need better timing to be able to do that as well. So now our elastic runner, our 5K runner A, scales. They're able to do that. She's well able to go in and surpass that, whereas our 30-minute 5K-er, they hit the ceiling because they're a shuffler. Their running style, their technique does not allow them to do that. Okay, and I don't know how far fast you can get as being a shuffler, but you're limited. You're limited because you can't have the physics properties that allow you to have that speed. Okay, I know we're talking about performance here, but bear with me at the moment. So economy at one speed does not equal scalability across different speeds. So we're talking about running economy, okay, which is our enjoyment of running, if you like. So we're not out of breath all the time. Our 16-minute 5K is going to be far more comfortable, still in a very easy zone for them, where the 30-minute 5K isn't. Okay, and that, but there's a difference in technique. And then this Williams and Kavanagh report in 1987 that they also refer to looked at the relationship between distance running mechanics, running economy, and performance. And what they found was different runners use different movement patterns. Yet they had a similar running economy. And the conclusion that they came to was runners tend to self-organize towards an economical pattern. Right, but here's the caveat. The participants were all well-trained male distance runners. There were only 9 of them, and they were all very similar in terms of their performance. They were all competitive, and they were all experienced. Okay, so conclusion it's a bit of an assumption, but we can probably draw from that is they were all probably had the type of markers of good running form that I've been talking about for the last however many 15 years, whatever I've been coaching this. What we just saw there with the runners on the track. Okay, they'll all have that. So now we're comparing like for like, not like for not like. But you can't compare this with recreational runners because it's the same, because it's you know, they're very, very different. And all of these runners had a mean VO2 max of 70 milliliter kilogram per minute, which is well above, you know, kind of recreational standards. So these are all well-trained athletes. So again, why is that Runner's World article bringing in something that's completely not relevant to the audience that they're looking at? And they were at a moderate to fast pace, which, you know, our average 25 to 30 minute 5K wouldn't be able to do that, even the moderate speeds that these are talking about, okay? So we're all injury-free, they're all customs treadmill running, and they were all consistent trainers. They were not beginners, they were not inconsistent runners, okay? So they trained regularly, they weren't injury-prone, and they weren't people with obvious system challenges. I'm not saying they were perfect with their systems, but there was nothing obvious there. And they weren't normal recreational runners. So I'm not comparing like for like. So I don't think, and I know the Runners World pull it in terms of it's building on the work of this and then goes on recreational runners. But that study was such a small study, a very small niche group of people. I don't think it belongs in there. So then I sort of, well, there must be something to do with recreational runners here. And there is. There's something that was called preferred movement pattern research. So this looked at how exactly what we were saying, that the body adapts. Okay, and the key finding here is that runners do settle into a preferred stride pattern. And if we try and change that, it often results in worse economy. Kind of exactly what you were saying, Julia, that you try and change, you try and force a change to your running technique and your hips hurt. In this case, they're not saying there was a higher injury risk, but what they're saying is the economy got worse, okay? So this is often cited as being self-optimized, okay? So they're self-optimized and changing it is the wrong thing to do, okay? But that's not the full story. Because in reality, what they've done is that this is the most economical solution available to their current system at the current time. You can't optimize what you don't have. A 30-minute 5K cannot optimize a 16-minute 5K system because they don't have it. They just don't have it. They can only optimize what they have. And that's what the human body does. And going back to what I said, you know, put your question up there, Drew, is that we always adapt to those movements. That's what our nervous system does. It is. And we are a compensation upon compensation upon compensation. Okay. So we will always optimize what we have. Doesn't mean to say that's the best. It's just doing the best with what it has. Okay, that's very different from saying that's the best technique for us. They're two completely different things. It might be the best technique for us given where we are right now with what we have to work with. That's not saying that it's the best technique. And this is where it gets very misleading. But we all can also look at variability research. So skilled runners tend to have controlled variability, and less skilled runners either are too rigid or too chaotic. Okay, which basically means that skilled runners have more ability to change their technique on the fly. Okay. Recreational runners often lack useful variability, and they default to limited patterns, which is what we saw in that half marathon research that the whole podcast is based on, the first part of the podcast, where as they start to get tired, they simplify the movement down. Okay, so our skilled runners are able to change on the fly how they run in terms of technique, according to terrain, according to the weather, according to how a race is going or a run is going, whereas recreational runners, or less skilled runners, should we just say, rather than recreational runners, less skilled runners, quite often aren't, because they have rigid movement patterns. They don't have the same breadth of variability that more skilled runners have. Okay? And we're not even necessarily talking directly about technique here, although that's obviously how it displays out. And if we look at fatigue research, there are consistent findings that say that as we get tired, contact time increases, force reduces, and coordination shifts. Our joint loading changes. And all of the above is a loss of access to preferred movement. Okay. So if you're starting off with a very limited variability, that gets restricted even more. So we're kind of moving away from, should I change my running technique in terms of, should I change how I look when I'm running, if you like, to how can I create variability? And that comes out in running technique. So the conclusion of all that research into recreational runners was that recreational runners do show some self-organization, but they're constrained by their system. Okay. It's not necessarily optimal. It's optimized for where they are right now, but it's not necessarily optimal. Okay. It's not stable under load a lot of the time. So in other words, runners don't optimize their movement. They optimize what's currently available to them right now. And those two things are very, very different. I think that's where a lot of confusion comes out in terms of what's been talked about on the internet, what's been talked about in articles. Because the media, and that Runner's World article has done this almost textbook way, no single variable matters, which gets interpreted as nothing matters, which gets interpreted as don't change anything. And I don't think that's particularly helpful. So if we look at go and look at it again now, we can see a recent analysis of running form concluded that no particular style is better than another. No, it doesn't. It didn't say that. It said no particular style variable, no technique variable is better. No style. They never said that at all. Okay, so that's wrong. That whole first sentence is wrong. Okay. It said it focused on ground time versus air time, and in short, your shuffler or bouncer. Interestingly, it concluded that where you are on the continuum makes no significant difference to your running economy. That bit, I guess, is true. That is what the research found. But it found it at all the runners running at the same speed, which is not very useful if you want to come up with some way of deciding whether you want to change your technique or not. Because if you're a 30-minute 5K and you're quite happy with that and you don't get injured, and then fine, don't change a thing. But if you're a 30-minute 5K and you want to get to 25 minutes, you're going to have to change something. You're just going to have to. There's no two ways about it. And as I mentioned, that 1997 study is irrelevant there, completely irrelevant. And they say, in other words, we all happen upon the running form that works best for us. No, we don't. Nowhere in either of those studies, actually, anywhere in that did it say that at all. They've just drawn that conclusion from this. What actually, any interpretation from that will be that we all happen upon optimizing what we have right now. That's not the same thing, okay? And the big caveat in there, of course, they put in there, if you're not continually injured, it may be best to leave your running form as it is. So what? But if you are injured, or if you are getting pain and niggles, because we have to say pain and niggles is injury, really, because that's how most runners will look at it, then you might have to change it. So then you kind of think, well, what's the point of the article? When you take it apart like that, you think, well, what is the point of that article? I don't know. So any comments on that? Nope. Okay. So a lot of what I've just been talking about really is about performance. So we're going to come back to Julia's original question. And the bit I kind of highlighted in black there is, am I risking injury by trying to change? It's really talking about injury as opposed to anything else. Given that your goal is longevity, are you risking injury by changing your running technique? Okay. So is, I'm going to stick you back in that room for 5 minutes. And I want you to answer these questions. You might have to just make a note of these somewhere. When does your running form break down? Okay, and that might be different for both of you. I mean, you probably might be quite similar, actually. What does it feel like when it does? Have you tried to fix it, and what happened? And I know we have a bit of insight to that already, but it'd just be useful just to kind of focus it in on those things. Welcome back.
Hello.
Okay, let's hear your answers.
So we had quite different answers, actually. We were quite different. So cool. I don't know if you want to go first, Mark. When does your running break down? Is he there?
Got what I wrote down.
Do you want me to say what you said, or do you want to say
yes,
it again?
Yes, please, yeah.
But me say it?
Yes, please, yeah.
So Mark says his running breaks down when he overthinks it.
Okay, that's interesting.
I said when I get tired. So for me, I think it's about two-thirds through whatever I'm doing, two-thirds through a part one, two-thirds through a interval session, two-thirds through a 10K, two-thirds through a half marathon. I think it's that point that things break down for me. So we had very different answers to that. Do you want me to carry on with the questions? Question two, what does it feel like when it does? For Mark, it feels like we were a bit more similar on this. Mark, it's his hip will hurt. I can't read my own writing. Pace. What did you say about your pace, Mark? Pace, no, not.
My pace would drop down.
Pace drops down. Yeah. And I guess we were similar. For me, usually the first thing I do is my knee just goes a little bit niggly. And then I think, oh, I'm overstriding. Oh, I'm being too heavy. And it just feels hard work. Just starts to become really hard work, and I'm getting quite heavy on my feet. Have you tried to fix it? We both said yes. And what happens? And Mark said he's kind of almost in a bit of a cycle there, because it almost gets worse because it breaks down when he's overthinking it, and then he starts overthinking it again. So it's almost like a cycle he's getting stuck in. And for me, I find the problem is I then slow down by thinking about it, and then that annoys me. So I'll be doing a part run. I think I can feel my knee start to hurt. I know I'm overstriding. I know I'm being too heavy. So I try to get, you know, I think, right, come on, Julia, stop over, you know, stop these things. But then my pace drops down. So I don't like that.
Okay, it's really interesting, and that's really good, really, really good. Thank you for doing that. That's so. Let's add in that extra little question then. When you say, "Have you ever tried to fix it?" What have you done to try and fix it?
Do you mean like while we're actually running, or do you mean like doing exercise and things that we've been doing with you? We weren't quite sure how to interpret the questions.
Ah, okay. No, that's fair enough. Fair point. If we say, if you've recognised that fatigue is where you break down for yourself, okay, what have you done to try and fix that specifically?
No, to me.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm not addressing the fatigue issue. I'm addressing the, I get tired, I know I get heavy, so I try and think, right, okay, what do, you know, my technique's dropping here. Come on, Julie, get a bit lighter. Come on, stop over. Because I know I tend to overreach with my, you know, I reach too far forward, my stride length. So I try and sort of pull it in a bit, go, you know, put my foot straight down. You know, the things you've talked to me about, try and be a bit lighter. So I'm not addressing the fatigue. I'm just trying to address the technique, I guess. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Okay, yeah. So you're, so what you're trying to do is you're, And we can say either in the moment, or the exercise that you've been doing in the background, you know, when you're not running, to try and sort it. That's slightly different than other stuff I've given you to do. But in the moment, that's probably the better example, perhaps, then, is you're trying to fix the output.
Yes.
And as we know, that's very difficult to do. So you can't ever really, obviously you can alter fatigue, but that's a slightly different discussion. But you, at some point, fatigue is always going to get you in a longer run or a hard run. It just is, because that's we all get tired. The difference is whether that fatigue affects the access to the skills that you have. And very clearly in your situation, it is. So when we look at this is kind of why I developed the whole neuroactive system in the first place. It's all about accessing that performance or those skills when you're under fatigue, pressure or load conditions. So as you start to get tired, what is happening is your system is simplifying and shutting things down. And when it's doing that, the flaws in your underlying systems are coming out. And because that's happening, that's why you feel heavier. That's why you think you might overstride. I don't know measurably whether you are overstriding or not, whether that's just a perception that you have. But these things, as you get tired, you're less able to keep everything together. And then that becomes a cycle in itself. And the pain is you know, your system's way of basically saying, I don't like what you're doing right now. And we've gone from the state of being absolutely fine to now not being fine. Whether it's your running form has changed, therefore you're loading slightly differently, or it's a perceptual thing, whichever. The fact is you're not able to access the skills you had before you were tired. That's the bit that's got to be addressed. Okay. And that's the training that has to be done. The stuff that I've been giving up to this point, I've been trying to get rid of. We've been doing that at a very low level, but we've been doing it very to fix some, or I don't really like the word fix, but to kind of resolve some of the very specific issues your challenges that you've had, to get us to where you are now. And I think, you know, the next step is to then very clearly is to look at access to those skills at the point where you get tired. And for Mark, that's slightly different. The same thing is happening to you, but you're interpreting it in a different way. You can put it in your own words, but when you start to overthink it, how does that manifest? At what point does that happen? You know, how far into that happen, for example?
From a time point of view, depending on what the run is, as soon as I start to tire, I'm then kind of like conscious then of my hip, and then I try to remember, okay, I must relax, so I shouldn't be so stiff and what have you, and I try to focus on that. I try to like you've said before, doing the like PI fingers when I'm running, etc. Just trying to take my mind away from my hip, but it's always the hip that always seems to win, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then it gets to a point, and I can't shut it out. I'm not saying I'm in agony when I run. But like the other Tuesday after the session, I struggled to walk back to the van because it was just really, really uncomfortable. And the whole of the next day, it was just really uncomfortable. And I'm just thinking, what do I need to do? Because I'm doing exercises and whatever you, and I'm struggling to understand the correlation between, oh, it's just a running pain and I should try almost to try and ignore it, but then why am I struggling to walk for 24-48 hours after a run? It's just, yeah.
I don't think you should ignore it. Remember, pain's there for a reason. Pain's very useful. It's absolutely there for a reason. It's telling you that something isn't right. So we shouldn't ignore pain. You should never ignore pain. Some discomfort sometimes, you can go through it, and the very base, underneath all, You have to help your brain feel safe at that point. So what's happening when you're getting the reason why you're then saw for a day or so later is because you've been creating a lot of tension at that time, and your system goes into protection mode. It says, I don't like what you were doing at that time, and I'm going to stop you from doing it again, in the immediate time frame. And so it carries on a high sensitivity around the threat sensors, the nociceptors. No, you call it tissue, whatever you want to do, but basically you've got a higher sensitivity in that area or interpretation of that area, because it doesn't want you to do it again. So we have to kind of go backwards a little bit and go and say, okay, it then, therefore, what we're basically seeing is the same pattern as Julie. What happens is you start to get tired, it starts to hurt. You then start to try and make some changes, which you're doing the piano things and stuff, which is great, because stimulates the cerebellum. It'll help with overall tone, because one of your biggest challenges is you tend to tense up, and that largely is to do with stability. And we saw that from your original assessments that you did, is that as your whole system starts to tire, that will get worse. So therefore, you create more tension, and creating that more tension means you don't move in as fluid a way, and therefore then becomes this self-fulfilling thing. And then you try and change stuff, which is hard to, of an output level, is hard to do. You're trying to change it through an input level, which is exactly the right thing to do. It might have a small impact, but it's obviously not having the full impact. But then what you're doing is once you finish the run, an addition that you probably need to be doing is adding in something at that point to calm the system down and to help it feel safe after having done that movement. Because at the moment, what you're doing is you're leaving it in a high level of in a high threat level situation. So it's learning an association with running up to a certain point is okay, but then it starts to get painful, and then you get in pain after a run. And that's a cycle that and the system gets very, very good. All our systems get very good at learning. That's neuroplasticity. It's happening all the time. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. And at the moment, it's not being very helpful because it's learning that to associate stiffness and pain with running. So those neural pathways are getting stronger. So what we have to do is change the interpretation of it. Yes, we want to resolve that whole thing about why it hurts in the first place at a certain point. And that seems to come and go a little bit, I think, doesn't it, in terms of whether it's the beginning or whether it's partway through. And it's partway through now, which is great. But we now need to get to that point of, and this is kind of what I was saying to you, when you feel that in a run, that's when you stop, do some bits and pieces to make your brain feel safe, and then you can start again. And by doing it that way, you're kind of taking, you're saying to the system, right, I hear you, but do you know what? You can be safe within this environment. And I'm going to help you be safe by doing some bits and pieces. And then I want to start running again. Okay. For me personally, I get it in my left ankle, hairline fracture when I was 12 years old skiing. And the other day, for some reason, I don't really know, I think my volume's gone up a little bit. It was so painful I could hardly walk on it, and I've been trying lots of different things, and in the end it was actually the other side of my foot, because it was on the outside of my ankle, it was on the other side of my foot. I just held it for 10 seconds. I haven't had the problem since, but I can hardly walk on it up to that point for 2 days. But I've noticed if I get tired or stressed, or if I've had a really bad diet or whatever, that left ankle is the one that always goes first when I go for a run, and it can be quite a sharp pain to the point you're thinking, well, have I done something to it? But I know myself well enough now. I know that's not the case. I just have to find a way of helping my brain feel safe about moving that ankle again and loading it again. And it's not necessarily the same thing I do every time. I have to change it. And this is kind of, I suppose that's a challenge I have, is I want to try and teach you guys how to do that for yourselves rather than always trying to follow a plan, to do this, because it's not the same thing that will work every time. That's why physios just don't work every time. And they don't work for everybody, because they do tend to do this very similar things in similar situations, because that's what they've learned to do. But that's not how we work as human beings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense, I must admit. Yeah.
So there's two, and I think in both yours and Julius' situation, first of all, we need to resolve the, or we need to make it better that you're able to access the skills that you have when you're tired. So that probably means having a higher level of those skills in the first place. And the second thing is just making sure that when you do have that pain, you've got options to try and help create brain safety around it. So you're not perpetuating that sort of development, if you like, that neural development in that area.
I find that absolutely fascinating what you've just said, because if had that been me, my ankle, so I had an injury when I was 12. That's exactly what had that been me, I would have convinced myself I had a stress fracture or some kind of fracture in my ankle when it started hurting, but you were able to, and then that would, and I kind of, almost like catastrophize it, which is what I do with whatever it is. I convince myself it's the worst case scenario and then almost convince myself of that. And the fact that I find it fascinating, Chris, that you're able to get yourself out of that situation, because I cannot get myself out. I do eventually, but it takes, whereas with my hip and with my foot and blah, 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 I should have quite quickly been able to, I think, get myself out of it and back to running. It's taken me quite a long time. So I find that really, really interesting, the way that you're somehow, and I'd love to learn that better, to how you manage to very quickly get yourself back and out of pain. Because I just cannot, however much positive thinking and blah, 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 and try and think about other things, and I just can't get myself out of it. And I think it's the worst thing, and it's got to be a fracture.
I think part of that awful. I think part of that's reframing the approach. And positive thinking doesn't work. I heard something about positive thinking recently, and just really how, some people maybe it works, but there's no basis for it really, in terms of evidence and on being of any use to very much, other than trying to disillusion yourself. I think the reframing is, and the big thing for me, and I guess it was when I first started looking, I've always had an interest in kind of the brain-based stuff, but during lockdown when I really got into it and I watched that, the very first course that I watched, I did it just blew me away. And when I started to experiment with it, and it was really experimenting, with myself and then with a couple of people that I was coaching at the time, and I could see an impact. I thought, so I believe it. And it's not a dumb belief in terms of, I believe it, therefore it happens. I believe that's how we're built, and all the evidence suggests that is exactly the case. But therefore what I do is I look at it as a problem solving approach. So it's not about saying, oh my goodness, what's wrong? So okay, sometimes if it's really sore, it gets frustrating that I can't resolve it. I have a nerve issue in my lower back that was from a carting thing again not long after I moved down to Bournemouth, and that does affect the left side. And I get pain in my hip, I get pain in my calf, and sometimes I have to work. I have to figure out different ways of being able to find ways, like doing the neuromechanic drills or using, I just try different things. The massage gun sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't work. I've been having sore knees the last few runs, but that's partly because my mileage has gone up to, just around about 40 miles a week for the last 3 weeks. And so I just sat down yesterday and for 20 minutes, I just did, it's the scraping thing, the you see it. These are one cheap ones from Amazon, but they do the same thing. I did that on my quads, resolved it on one side completely. The other side is about 80% resolved. When I did my 5K today, I had a tiny little bit of residual pain. But it's about trying different things. It's about understanding that I have to make my brain feel safe. And I know it's nothing. There's nothing wrong, because if I had a hairline fracture, I would have known about it.
But how would you have known? Because you said you could hardly walk on your ankle and it was so painful. So why did you not immediately think, I fractured my ankle?
Well, because
that's what I'd have thought.
I hadn't run into anything, I hadn't fallen over, I hadn't rolled my ankle.
Yeah, but you hear people all the time, runners talk about stress fractures.
Yeah, they do. But
And that's my biggest fear, because I think a physio said to me once, a stress fracture in the foot, a stress fracture takes months and months and months to come back from. And then I worry.
I don't believe that people who have had stress fractures run didn't know about it before it happened. I just don't believe that.
I just imagine these fractures happen from running.
It's probably accumulated loads, accumulated something they're doing. And yes, there might not, it might not be a single event that's done it, but they'll have had a load of warning about it beforehand. Because that system, the system, your bone just doesn't go from being perfectly fine to being fractured over the course of one small run, unless you've done some big loading on it, then you'd be able to pinpoint it. Do you see what I mean?
But you might be tricking your brain into thinking it's not about to get a fracture and it's in your ankle, because so you're almost masking the pain.
You can't.
You're tricking your brain.
You might be able to do that if you took some very strong painkillers.
I'm just trying to understand how I look at it and why I can't get past it. And you can. I'm trying to understand. And, yeah, you know, with Mark, he can't get past his pain.
Yeah.
And you can. And I find it incredible that you can. And you're able to. I just find, yeah. And I want to get to that place.
But I suppose the way I look at it is I would know if I'd done something to a bone, I'd be pretty sure I'd know about it. And. But I think if you, I don't know, maybe I'll have a look into, I'll look into things like stress fractures and stuff. Cause I get it. I get the fear factor of it, but I just think you're going to have had plenty of warning, or it must've been some big loading event to do it. I mean, your bones are pretty strong. Unless you've got something genetically wrong with you, bones don't just create hairline fractures. When I damaged my shoulder, that was a skiing accident. I was going really fast and I fell and I slid on ice for quite a long way and it did a little bit of damage. It was a small triangular piece out of my bone. And the force of that impact, it was only, okay, it affected me for a long time, but it was only that was quite a big impact. I just don't believe that people get these fractures, these hairline fractures, without any warning. A lot of them used to come from people who used to run in go straight from running in normal shoes to these barefoot shoes, and they probably find it really hard. So they didn't have the skill of the bounce within the fascial tissue and all that kind of stuff. So they're landing really hard, and I would question their sanity if they thought that was just how they were supposed to be running, and they just carried on through it. That's how you develop a stress factor. So I kind of, anyway, I'll look into it. I don't want to say anything that's out of turn. I'm sure there are instances where it's just accumulated load and it does just happen. But you've got to be really overloading it, I think, or be really, you might, or have a lack of skills. There's the other way of doing it. Like, just like that example there, if you're going to go into shoes without any bounce in it, you better make sure that you've got the bounce in your feet and your ankles, you know, and all that fascia lined up, and you know you're super bouncy. Otherwise, that something's got to take the load. So I think, you know, there's an element here of, you know, I don't know how honest people are about saying this stuff where they go see physios, to be honest. But logically, doesn't make any sense to me. And I think they would have had a lot of warning about it. So we have to change a few of it. So there's a couple of things we have to look at there. So when we look at, because this kind of comes back to your